on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to Jenny Green there. It's Thursday the 2nd of July and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Limerick hurling hero Shane Dowling on the goals, the glory as he steps away from the big stage.
But listen, as far as I'm concerned now, 94, 96 and 07, they're firmly put to bed and 2018 now is the way forward for the kids of this great little city.
We talk sporting governance during a pandemic with Irish athletics icon John Tracy.
And Tracy may have stolen it. He might just have stolen it, in which case Steve has only got himself to blame. He'll not begrudge him, but Tracy, the mudlark, has sneaked it. And I'm sure he stole it on the line.
No, he didn't steal it. He won it every time. Athlete Andrew Cosgrin on setting his own track record. Plus, we're live in Man City as Liverpool get a guard of honour.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Dunica, you mentioned the Guard of Honour there that Liverpool are going to get at Manchester City tonight. I've never heard so much talk about a Guard of Honour before in my life. It's been made into the biggest deal ever and I'm not sure that it is. As a former player, what do you think?
Maybe there's a crossover here in sports, but in rugby it's something that's done all the time. In rugby you always clap opposition off the pitch at the end of every match, so you kind of get used to doing it. And I think it's just it's a respect thing. I would hate that in the professional world that we lose something like that. I think Liverpool, rightly crowned champions, if it was the other way around and Man City won it, to clap a mode is important. I think it just shows respect for something they've done that has been really tough. And look, I've been there when you've had to clap other teams on, but you remember special ones. I remember I played in Musgrave Park, as it was at the time, now in the Irish Independent Park, but Mick Galway was retiring, and to be fair to Ulster, they came down from the Sunday's Well end and they clapped Mick Galway onto the pitch, and they kind of knew for us not to take advantage of that. They were clapping Mick Galway onto the pitch, they weren't clapping Munster, so if we'd ran on after it, it could have probably kicked off, but they wanted to mark his career, and I just thought it was a nice thing, and it's respect, and it's a massive thing we have to keep in sport. We have to keep the values and the respect things as a part of it, and I think it's a good way for Man City. It'll be tough for them, but clap them onto the pitch and then show them what they've got on it.
It probably wasn't helped, the conversation, I mean, probably wasn't helped by Danny Murphy this week. He said it was nonsense and then he went on to say that Kevin De Bruyne, the best midfielder probably in the world, he's clapping his hands and giving a guard of honour to players who can't even lace his boots.
Yeah, and he's kind of right in ways. Kevin De Bruyne can't say that, but he can think it, can't he? And it certainly is very, very tough for those kind of guys, but I know one man that would get a standing ovation at the moment, Marie, from O'Connell Street to Capa Moore. He's been incredible for Limerick and I think we're lucky enough to have him.
Yeah, and just today Shane Dowling announced his retirement and his backroom team and John Kiley said that a player you can depend on to produce a piece of magic is Shane Dowling, and I think that's a very, very fitting description of Shane. Shane, how are you?
Good evening, guys. How are you doing?
I imagine you've been busy today.
I have. I don't know if it's like I'm alive at my funeral or something with what people are saying. But to be honest about it, I'm extremely humbled, and it's made me quite emotional to see and to hear a lot of comments that people are saying. And listen, it's incredible. I'm still bloody emotional. I'd rather be over at this stage, but I don't seem to be getting over anytime soon.
Well, we're going to add to that now, because we heard that James Blunt is your favourite singer, so our producer Ronan has put together some of your best bits to the tune of James Blunt. So get the tissues ready and listen to this.
But time stands still and I'm feeling so much, and it's all right here, and I just gotta trust that you're the one. The time has come, so tell me, baby, what's it gonna take? We can be the champions, we can own the night. Yeah, it might destroy us, but we gotta try. Can't keep looking backwards, running from the light. Cause this could be the greatest moment of our lives.
It's an opportunity, it's Kyle Hayes. They need to get a goal, they get it. It's Shane Dowling, the man who rescued them so many times in the past, has done it again. But 64 minutes, hold the obituary, they're not dead just yet.
They lead by one, a place in the All-Ireland final at stake. Shane Dowling, goal! They came back from the dead in the last 10 minutes of normal time.
What a penalty, Darren. Look at this, into the top corner of the net.
Congratulations, Shane Dowling. That's how you make an introduction to an All-Ireland semi-final, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, Joanne, it's pure magic. You know, to hear Sean Sauf and Gary Owen ringing out there. Listen, we're a passionate county, but I will ask for one message. I'll ask the supporters to enjoy it, and I hope they embrace it. But I do plead that they leave the players' focus for the next 3 weeks, because we've been here a number of times in the last 30 or 40 years, and this time I really hope we're not just going to get to the final to march behind a band. I want Limerick to go all the way.
He tries to pass, comes to Dowling. What's he going to do? Back in the net. What a player. What a moment. 45 years surely is about to end.
Now, Shane, a nice fitting tribute there. I'd say it brought back a lot of memories.
Jesus, did you really need to do that? Listen, thanks so much. That's incredible. I didn't expect that. Thanks very much.
That's Ronan, our producer, and he's living down in Limerick as well, so there you go.
Fair play, Ronan. That's top quality. I'd love to know who you get on to. They told the secret of James Lumpy, my favourite singer, but anyway. but yeah, no, listen, that's incredible, Marie. It's... you know, I suppose, listen, it's still difficult, it's still surreal, you know, but it is what it is. And as I've been saying, you know, I'm going to look at the positives and say how fortunate I have been to experience them days, you know.
You really had some great days in the green, Shane, and, you know, sports fans, hurling fans will have watched Limerick so many times not get there, but to actually be able to walk away from the game having walked the steps of the Hogan is pretty amazing.
It is, and I suppose, for, you know, I often wondered, you know, was I mad, you know, growing up thinking that I was going to achieve that, because, and I would have said to myself on many occasions, like, why me? Why should I be the lucky guy that's part of, like, one of 36 players that will get to win All-Ireland when nobody else has in the last 45 years, you know? And as I said, and you know, I don't want this story to be about my knee. I don't want this story to be about my injury. I want it to be about my career. And I want it to be, you know, how fortunate I've been to be part of such a wonderful group of players, past and present, and indeed like that with the management team as well, both past and present. I've been very, very fortunate. And I sometimes have to, in days like today, even as sad as it is, have to pinch myself and say, you know, I could never have thought what happened would have happened in my career, and I'd be forever grateful for that.
You, Shane, though, in fairness, like all through your career and even on your retirement, you've never made it about yourself. You've made it about all the people who helped you along the way, all the underage coaches, the academies, Napier Shig, underage at Limerick, everybody that helped you get there.
But I wholeheartedly mean that, Marie. The reason I do that is because I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for them people. This isn't a journey that you can go on your own. So, like, if Napier Shig weren't so good to me when I was young, and if they didn't give me the love of the game, and if they didn't give me the support, I wouldn't have been able to represent Limerick. When I was in with the 14s with Limerick, if I didn't get that guidance, and if that support wasn't there, I wouldn't have continued on to play. You know, it's different people guide you in the right directions, and if people, my schools, you know, if they don't guide you in the right directions, essentially, you're not going to get to these big days. And it's a team sport, but I don't like taking credit, because, you know, it's not just me. Of course, I have to go and put the work in, but magic people have guided me in the right direction, and I always want to remember them, because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have achieved what I did, or I wouldn't have got to play with Limerick.
Shane, I've been so lucky to talk out with brilliant Limerick men. What is it about Limerick? What is it about Limerick men that can elevate them to performance beyond themselves?
It's hard to describe. For Limerick, it just seems to be a complete passionate county. And obviously yourself, Donegal, have gotten to have to play with obviously the likes of Paul, and I suppose it's fairly unfair to name one because there's many of them, you know. But it's just a culture here in Limerick. Every county has a culture, and the culture here in Limerick is built around sport, and it's built around success. And I suppose that's all I've ever known. Even for me growing up as a kid, you know, Limerick hurling, you know, wouldn't be as strong as where it is now, but Munster Rugby was strong. So I could see what sport meant to people in Limerick when Munster Rugby was going well. And obviously, you know, Limerick hurling is going extremely well now, and maybe Munster Rugby isn't going as well. And that's the way it goes in different decades, like, you know. And, you know, people in Limerick just want to get on the supporters' bus and support people along the way. I mean, you saw when Munster won the Heineken Cup, and you saw the crowds that were on O'Connell Street, and it was no different when Limerick won the All Ireland, the crowds that were in the Gaelic grounds both the night of the homecoming and indeed the day of the match. And it seems to be bred into our veins down here that we just love sport, and we're extremely passionate. And so that's really it.
It definitely is part of the fabric of the city. Shim, one of my favourite interviews ever is yours after the All-Ireland final, because sometimes with elite sport, we don't really get to see the human side. We don't really get to see the emotion. It's like it's seen as a weakness. But you never saw it like that. We always got to see your emotion, highs, lows. It didn't matter. You just owned it.
Yeah, but that's my character. That's my character. Everybody is different. And I suppose if I had to have one, I don't know, is it a problem in life, but unfortunately or fortunately for me, is my highs go probably too high and my lows go too low, you know. So the last 10 days I've obviously been extremely low. I make no apologies about that, and that's the facts of it. And I mean, after the All-Ireland final, I go extremely high, you know. And yeah, that interview was me, you know. And I'd like to think the statement that I brought out today, that wasn't written for me, you know, that was me, they were my words. And, you know, I like to be the person that I am, and if people like that, well and good, and if they don't, so be it. And but I think it's what people have to be. You have to be your own person, and if that comes out emotionally or whatever, then that's who you are, and that's who I am.
Shane, obviously disappointing for you having to retire at 27, but the decision taken out of your hands, just we're seeing the feedback from other players around, but the tighter circles, your family, the likes of John Kiley, what have they been saying to you in the last 24 hours?
Yeah, so it was 2 weeks ago when I suppose really I knew that it was all over for me, and I met a couple of people and a couple of friends. Just I didn't even go into in full detail. I just said I was going to be under pressure. But then I said, listen, I was lying to people down here in Limerick. I was lying to my family. I was lying to everybody. They asked me how my knee was, and I was saying, listen, I'm hoping to, I'll get there. And knowing in my heart and soul I wasn't going to get there, and it was affecting me. And I just said, listen, you know, this is a story. There's no point in delaying the inevitable, and I just have to deal with it and move on. So last Friday evening, I rang John Kiley to call in for a cup of tea, and he called into the house and we sat down for 2 hours, and I told him. And you know, when he left, you know, I closed the door and he walked away, and it was a very, very difficult hour after that, because even though I knew before he came what the situation was going to be, you know, when he left and I closed the door, like, that was final for me, you know. And on Saturday I called to Declan Hennon's house. We'd be very close, we grew up together. And we met for a coffee, and he called over to my house on the Sunday, and we had a lot more than coffee, I can tell you. It was we were reminiscing of all times. And you know, and I spoke to my I went to speak to my parents on Saturday. I bailed out. I met them on Sunday. I was going to tell them I bailed out. And you know, I just found it very, very difficult, because they've been a part of the journey with me, and they guided me in this direction. And I met them one day and just broke down in front of them, and, you know, their words were, you know, once you'll be okay, we'll be okay, and, you know, I will be okay.
And Shane, just like, obviously it's retirement is hard for everybody, and, you know, when you're young, it's going to affect you more, but what is it about it? Like, what are you finding the most difficult? Is it the fact that you're not going to be there with the lads, that you're not going to be able to perform at the peak of your powers, or just that part of you, you're not going to have that anymore?
No, and I suppose, like, if you were to ask the older generation of Napiershi, like, they will tell you that, you know, the, you know, I literally slept there. I live 15 seconds beside the pitch. I spent every night there as a kid. I pucked out balls behind the goals when the senior team were training, and since I was 6 years of age, all I've ever known is hurling. And every, you know, and if there's 365 days of the year, I probably am occupied by 200 of them in terms of training, and that's been the case for the last God knows how many years of my life, and now it's gone. There's a big void in my life, and it's just a disappointment. Hurling is one thing, I'll miss that, that goes without saying. In terms of the crack that I have with all the lads, we're a very, very close-knit group, and you know, we do some great fun. Like, the sometimes going down training, what keeps you going is the dressing room, the half an hour dressing room beforehand, even before you take to the pitch. You know, that's all been taken away from me, and that's going to be very difficult.
So when you do make a decision, like, it's out of your hands, but a decision that you have made, like, have you plans put in place now, Shane? How are you going to fill the void? Because I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for you, because, as you said, like, living right beside Napiershi, your whole life been wrapped around a game that you loved and that you're really good at as well.
Yeah, the honest answer is I don't know. I have no idea how I'm going to fill the void. I suppose, first and foremost, I've got to get me recover. So my 2 weeks post a skull procedure, it's not overly evasive, so I'm, you know, I'm not too bad, but another week or so and I should be fully over it. I'm going to try to get back cycling, swimming, and please God do a small bit of running if it allows me. Like, I have walked with a limp for the last 5 months, so I think by the procedure I got done 2 weeks ago, there was loose bodies removed, so that should take the pain away. I should be able to walk, and hopefully I can go back running, and, you know, go from there. I don't know. I've no answers. I don't know how that side is going to be filled. I'm going to find. I found the last 2 weeks difficult. I was going to work and I was coming home and I wasn't going out. I couldn't go out. I was just too down on myself. And so, yeah, I don't know, the honest answer.
Obviously, like, of course, it is very tough, but it's also nearly a celebration to look back at all the incredible things you've done. And Shane, you know what good is now. And you mentioned the Pearcy, you mentioned Limerick. Do you see the next chapter involving them? Would you maybe in some form of a role to be able to help and give back?
Well, listen, I gave 5 years coaching a team in the club. I finished last year, so I took them over at 10 and brought them to 14s. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I got a great buzz out of it. So, you know, is that a role that I'll probably look into? Yeah, it is. You know, I enjoy doing it. I just love the game, so I'm not going to just walk away from it. And what roads or what avenues might open up, I don't know. But, you know, definitely coaching is something that I may have to look into. Whether I'm any good or not is another thing. But and I'm going to have to stay, you know, in some shape or form. But for now, what I'd love to think is that I can get back, you know, and do some bit of hurling and training with the Pearcy. Right now, I don't know if that's going to be possible, but that's definitely the short-term goal for now.
Well, we have a text in asking that exact question. Are you going to be playing for Napiershi next month in the Championship?
I don't even think I'll be able to do water boy for Napiershi next month, let alone play, unfortunately.
You know, even your injury there, when you're talking about it, Shane, like, walking with a limp, like, it's clearly very serious. If it, you know, just whatever about hurling, just getting back to regular life and being able to move like a normal 27-year-old.
Yeah, and listen, I was on a really extensive rehabilitation program for the last 3 months, from February for 3 months, and every bit, and the pain was there. And while I often thought that there was more to it, I kept on doing the rehab program, and I was thinking, I'd build up the strength of my quad muscle, and, you know, every time I impact the ground, that pain will go away. And after 11 weeks, I literally broke down. I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm still getting this savage pain. There's definitely something more wrong, and I needed to get it checked out. And the problem was, I had 4 loose bodies in my knee that were floating around the place. And, you know, the surgeon said he couldn't even understand how I went on as long as I did without checking it out, you know, that he could understand the pain that I was going through.
What are loose bodies?
Loose bodies is, so my cartilage basically is, all my cartilage is diseased, basically. So I've developed 3 different holes in the same knee, all cartilage related, you know, and it might be hard for the normal funder to understand when they don't know anything about knees, but, and that's what it was. So basically I hit a bit of diseased cartilage, and that fell off, and that created the loose bodies, and now I have a big hole in my knee because the cartilage basically is gone. A piece of the cartilage is gone.
How does that happen?
It just diseased cartilage, degenerative cartilage.
Yeah, just the and the extent of the injury.
Yeah, so like I got the first injury in 2017. It's basically what it's called is osteochondral defect. So I had a hole in my knee. He had to go in a micro fracture. It's where he drills holes, where he drills micro holes into the overall hole, and then that creates false cartilage, and that's how you recover. But unfortunately, I've had to get two of them done, and there's a third one coming. And actually, Paul O'Connell has been extremely good to me over the last couple of months. I've had four or five phone calls with him because he had the same thing done. Rob Kearney had the same thing done. And but I suppose they recovered from it because it never came back at them. But for me, it's just constantly coming back.
And Shane, I was reading today that you were actually even awake for one of the operations and being shown exactly, the procedure and what's going on.
Yeah, and again, I know it's a small bit gross, but for whatever reason, because of COVID, they couldn't knock it out completely. I don't know what the reason was behind that. But listen, I was heavily sedated. And I did say to the surgeon before he went in, I said, listen, if there is more damage than you think, I'm not giving you permission to go ahead and do another microfracture procedure. And I said, I just want the loose bodies removed, just in case.
Because you were hopeful to still play.
Why? Because, Donica, I've already had two microfracture procedures, and you're on crutches for 12 weeks, and you have another 6 months of rehab after that. I've got that twice already, and I can tell you it's mentally demanding. And, you know, I didn't want to wake up from the surgery and be told, so I was going down with the notion of being on crutches for 5 days afterwards. I didn't want to wake up and be told that I'm on crutches for 12 weeks. I wanted to be able to make a decision myself to see exactly what the problem is. So as the operation was going on, I was obviously heavily sedated, and I heard the surgeon mention microfracture, and I swear to God, it was like I just woke up completely when I heard that word. And I said, listen, you're not doing it. And he said, no, I'm not. And then he went on to explain. He said, listen, I still have the camera into me. Can I show you what's going on? And he said, listen, the operation I done last September has healed perfectly. And he showed me it. He said, I can show you the loose bodies that I've taken out because I have it already done. But he said, unfortunately, Shane, you have another large defect in your knee. And he said, I could operate on that, but the problem is the cartilage that's actually beside where the hole is also diseased, and that's going to go fairly soon as well. Whoa. And bear in mind, by the way, all this damage that was caused since last September has been caused by me doing little to no running on my knee. So can you imagine if I was doing all that training again?
Absolutely. And you mentioned, Rob Kearney and Paul O'Connell there. They're professional athletes. But for someone like you, this is on top of your work. And, you know, as Marie mentioned, they're walking with a limp just for later life. This is a serious disadvantage as you move on.
Well, all my friends are flat out playing golf at the minute. I play a bit. I'm useless at it, but I love going out just for something different. I can hit it as long as I want, but I've no idea what direction it goes. But as I said, I just like getting out, and I can't do that. Now, I'm hoping to be able to in the next couple of weeks, but it's just a small thing, isn't it? Or, please God, if I have kids in years to come, you know, I just want to be able to run around, you know, after them or whatever. So that's where it's at.
Are you worried about it, like just in general and the future and the impact it's going to have on or could have on your future?
Well, there's no point in worrying because that's not going to solve anything, is it? You know, I'm upset right now. I'd like to think that, I will recover and I will be able to live a normal life. Will I have to get a knee replacement? Yes, I will. Does that bother me? No, it doesn't. I don't care. Knee replacements these days are like as common as the cold. So I just want to be able to live a normal life going forward. And if that allows me to play a small bit with my club, well and good. And if it doesn't, so be it too. That's just the way it has to be, unfortunately.
Ruby Walsh would like your attitude. A knee replacement is as common as a cold.
Well, actually, speaking about Ruby Walsh, it's actually funny you mentioned him, right? He made a comment after Paul Townsend won the Gold Cup. I was watching it this year. And the interviewer said to Ruby, Ruby, you must be absolutely disgusted watching that, considering it could have been you. And he said, and do you know what? It resembled me so much because in the back of my mind, I always knew that this could potentially happen. He said, of course I miss not winning it, but I certainly don't miss the injuries and the work along the way. That's the way I'm going to have to look at it. You know, Limerick are going to play again, whether it be this year, in a couple of months, or next year. You know, will I miss it? Of course I'll miss it. But the attitude I have is, I'll miss it, but I don't miss the battling
of the injuries all along the way.
Yeah, and he always says that as he got older, like the fall started to hurt a little bit more, the pain got a little bit more, and eventually just it wasn't worth it what he was getting out of it.
No, and that was Robbie's job, you know, like, so
that's the difference.
First of all, he's a professional athlete, but it's his job, and he said, listen, he never saw it as that, but at the end of the day, that was his source of income, so he had to keep doing it for as long as it was physically, you know. But I have no doubt that he went through physical and mental struggles. Like the game that they're in is extremely difficult, but it's for any sports person, professional or amateur, when D-Day comes, and especially when you're at the age I am and it's forced upon you, it's not nice.
But Shane, everyone looks at the brilliant days, don't they? They look at you beating Galway, winning the All-Ireland, but they don't know the journey, the sacrifices, everything you're outlining there that goes into that beautiful moment.
Yeah, and you will know yourself, very, very few people know that, and that's where your close circle of friends and your family come into play, and that's why they're the most important people at the end of the day, because, you know, everyone, and I always said that, everyone sees the great days, and everyone goes on and says, oh, geez, you scored a goal, and you did this, and you did that, and you did, and it's fantastic. But when you come home and close the door, nobody knows what's going on in the four walls of anybody's house. Like, I'm not... Like, yeah, the last 10 days for me have been extremely difficult. If people knew what I was going through, you know, would they be surprised? I'd say they would, because, like, I'm not superhuman. I'm a 27-year-old guy that's just played hurling since he was a kid, and, you know, I've found the last 10 days extremely difficult. I'm not going to hide that. But today, you know, when I see the nice messages, doesn't even do it justice. When I see what people have said and the different array of people, it makes it easier. And I have to say, I greatly appreciate it. It does mean a lot to me. I don't push it to one side. I genuinely mean, you know, it meant so much for all the kind words that were said by everybody.
Well, Shane, just going on the texts that we're getting in, you will have no shortage of people wanting to spend time with you, so that'll fill the void. Blake Forkin texted in and he said, Shane Dowling sounds like a buck that you'd love to have a siege of points with. No bull, upfront honesty and a good laugh. I'd say he's a few good stories to tell.
Well, I'll be there's plenty of time for a feed of pints anyway, so whoever that man is, if you're listening, I'll have a couple with you.
Shane Dowling, thanks so much. I think everybody in Limerick and all sports fans everywhere have really enjoyed watching you over the last few years. As you said, the words that people have said about you have been absolutely phenomenal. You're a credit to Na Piarsaigh and a credit to Limerick. Thanks so much for taking the call, and we wish you all the best in the future.
Here. Thanks very much. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. There is some football on the television. Sheffield United are playing against Spurs. 32 minutes gone at 31 minutes. Sheffield took the lead, but it looks like Harry Kane has equalised. It is going to VAR, so we will update you very, very shortly on that. Now, there is another big match on tonight. We might have spoken about it just a little bit. Manchester City are hosting Liverpool. It doesn't, like, there isn't a huge amount at stake, but it does have a big game feel about it. Peter Smith is there for us. Peter.
Jurgen Klopp has confidently predicted that this will be the greatest ever game played behind closed doors. City's guard of honour will be conducted with respect and sporting integrity. But the bigger picture for them is that they're still in the hunt to retain the FA Cup and to prize away Liverpool's Champions League title to add to their March Carabao Cup success at Wembley. Winning a title after only 31 games is unprecedented in English football. Breaking the 100-point record barrier remains well within Liverpool's grasp. The record at the Etihad Stadium hasn't been the best over the past 10 years, with just one win in 10 games. That was Jurgen Klopp's first ever visit here in 2015. They do stand a chance, the City, of doing a double over their opponents, or I should say Liverpool stand a chance of doing a double over their opponents, having comprehensively won the corresponding fixture at Anfield 3-1 last November. Neither manager is expected to tinker too much with selection. Fernandinho remains suspended for City. James Milner is back in the picture for Liverpool.
And just on the managers, you mentioned them there. Just knowing their personalities, I doubt either of them are going to want to lose.
Well, that frightens me when you say that, because then you think, is this going to be a dour game where neither team wants to open out and tactically everybody's so solid defensively? Or will we see a performance that reflects their personalities of great attacking football, end-to-end, loads of thrills, loads of goals? I'd like to think that's going to be the case, that we're going to see a high-scoring thriller But sometimes, you know, when you rev these games up like we do in the media, and the game gets underway, and one team says, after you, Claude, and the other one sort of sits tight to see what the other's doing, and time and minutes elapse, and then an awful lot happens. I hope we don't get one of those. I hope we get a high-scoring thriller.
Absolutely, Peter Smith at the Etihad. I like the sound of that. Lots of goals, lots of thrills, and maybe a nice dramatic Guard of Honour. So that Harry Kane goal hasn't been allowed, and Sheffield United are 1-0 up against Spurs. We'll be back very, very shortly with John Tracy and Andrew Coscarin.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. With the sport being back, there is lots to discuss when it comes to the future, practicalities, logistics, and much, much more. Our next guest is the perfect person to do that with. It's CEO of Sport Ireland, John Tracy. John, how are you?
Good, Maria, and yourself?
Absolutely fantastic. John, it's great to see sport back. We've been talking about it for so long and now we actually have it. But there's a lot more to it than just sitting down on the television or going out on a pitch and playing a little bit. How are the clubs and the associations all coping with the new normal?
Well, they're actually doing very well, I have to say now. The Department of Sport set up an expert group which we're represented on, and we've a number of medical doctors and that. And all the sports developed very detailed protocols about getting people back into sport. And we're into phase three now. And so we're basically looking at small crowds indoors and 200 outdoors. And we're basically, the guidance really for all the sports is you can start your competition, but do it very gradually. And most of the sports are taking a very reasonable approach to it, is that they don't want anyone getting injured by jumping into competitive sport too quickly. And what they're doing now is allowing the training and allowing the contact and getting back into it gradually. So all the sports have really developed a lot of detailed protocols. A lot of them have also looked at what's happening internationally and developed them from their international federations as well. But they're very, very good. And sport really has got, I suppose, led the way in terms of how we kind of resume. But really the message really there is be very cautious, and that's the approach that the sports are taking, and that's the message from the expert group as well. Be cautious, be aware, and let's take things slowly and not rush in and do things and put people in danger.
John, it is a hard time for sport though, because people are adjusting to the new normals and clubs are adjusting to new normals. Mm. So I imagine it's very important to keep supporting those clubs.
Yeah, and what a lot of the governing bodies have done is done training courses. We have done training courses ourselves, and they're on our websites and to the e-learning, and there's courses that they can, webinars that they can attend as well in terms of COVID training for COVID officers within clubs. LSPs are doing the same around the country as well. So there's a lot of guidance there through the governing bodies and through Sport Ireland. And so in terms of what they need to do to open up the clubs, in terms of the protocols they need to put in the clubs. And, you know, all of us now are back doing our own sports. We're in our own clubs and we're seeing the protocols and we're actually seeing them working extremely well.
John, do you worry for support? We've seen the formation of a new government and we see Catherine Martin has been put in place of the department, but she's also looking after culture, arts, media and tourism. It's a massive portfolio to look after when you consider, you know, could sport get lost in that?
I don't think so. And not for one minute. I suppose the important thing when we're in Sport Ireland, we always like to make sure that sport is at the cabinet table. And it is at the cabinet table. The other piece is that we always look as well in terms of it being in the title of the department. It's in the title of the department. And what you have in that department is a number of statutory agencies that do, I suppose, a lot of the heavy lifting around the various tourism, whether it be arts, whether it be sport or whatever it is. And then I know, and I'm speaking from personal experience as well, we have some excellent civil servants that deal with sport on an ongoing basis. The caliber of the work that they do is second to none. We have a national policy for sport, and if you look at the programme for government, I don't think I've ever seen sport covered extensively in a programme for government like that before. It's very ambitious, and it's something that we'll all have to work together to strive together to get it done. And really, I think the COVID piece has really kind of brought all the sporting organisations together as one, basically saying, look, we all need to help each other. And that's actually what's happening here as well. So I think we're in a good space. I think the government has clearly, obviously, helped sport hugely. The fund of $70 million that was made available last week will be hugely benefit to sport to get back on track. And there's funding there for the three main field sports, for the other NGBs, and then for the clubs and for start-up as well. And that's up to $70 million. So that's a substantial amount of money that will be spent over the next number of months. And the approach really in that will be see how the summer goes, and it really is funding for those that are really in dire straits, and it is there really to help those clubs maintain and keep going. And I think the important piece here is this: that sport funding is hugely helpful. But really, the message I'd like to get out tonight is to this: to the members of those clubs, continue to be members of the clubs, continue to pay your membership fee, because that's really vital, really vital for the survival of these clubs right around the country. No matter what discipline you're in, it's really, really, really important. Because what we want to do is we don't want sports clubs disappearing. We want them to survive. And, you know, when we're back to normal, hopefully, whether it be next year or the end of this year or whenever it is, we want to make sure those clubs are still there, still surviving, still thriving, and really continuing to play the benefit that they do to communities right around the country. And we're seeing smaller clubs, and there's a fund for them, which the community groups as well. And, you know, so what we want to do is obviously make sure all those clubs, groups survive, because really at the end of the day, and I think we really did see the value of sport during the lockdown, is that the value it brought to Irish people involved in physical activity and how good it was for their mental well-being. And we saw our numbers in terms of participation really, really increase. And the message is, we need to continue to do that. We need to make sure we invest in our health and well-being, and really make sure we look after our mental health. We are social animals after all, and there is nothing like getting out and doing a bit of sport with your friends.
John Green had a really interesting piece in the Sunday Indo, and he detailed the James Cronin and Robbie Powell's anti-doping cases, and the details were quite startling to read side by side when you look at that. They came to the same conclusion that there was no significant fault or negligence, but the bans were very, very different. Do you think we have a flawed anti-doping system in Ireland?
Do you think we have what?
A flawed system.
Well, okay, the James Cronin issue was not covered by the Irish sports system. It was covered by European rugby. The swimming issue was part of our anti-doping program and tested, and the sanction came down as part of that. And the rules apply, whether it's intentional or not intentional, and what the degree of fault was. And that's what we've applied in this particular case. And, you know, these are the rules. The consequences, the athletes know what the consequences are. And the athlete accepted this sanction without going to a hearing. And obviously he wants to get back into his sport as quickly as he possibly can. But look, we apply the rules, and the rules are dictated in for us. We apply the rules, and that's what we've done in this particular case.
Is it fair, though? Is it fair that one athlete and another athlete have such different bans when, you know, it was the same indiscretion?
Well, we can only speak for the ones that which were under our responsibility, and this was under our program, and the sanctions were under our program. It was under an NGB, an Irish NGB. This case was a European case. It didn't go to a hearing, and there was a different judicial process involved, and that was the conclusion they came to. Look, we can do is apply the rules as we see fit, and this is the sanction that was given in this particular case.
John, as players and athletes, you're right, they know there's consequences, they know there's faults, but do we have an educational problem with these athletes then, you know, knowing that their body is their business. It's their tool to perform. In two of these cases, you know, the responsibility on the player to have greater knowledge of what's going on.
Yeah. Look, this is obviously this is something that we feel strongly about. Is that, and Lineker, you would know this yourself, as I would myself. When you compete, you know you're responsible for what you put into your body, right? And that's the bottom line.
100%.
So you have to be ultra careful in terms of what your responsibilities are, and in terms of what you're putting on your and your doping control form and all that, right? And you need to know. And that was an issue that we met with the IRFU after this particular case. And the IRFU are obviously underlying that education piece with their players over the next number of months. And again, any athlete can't depend on the doctor, and the doctor shouldn't be doing it for the athlete either. So it is about athletes stepping up and taking their own responsibility for what they take, and be just. And I think the message really here out of this is just be very cautious and very careful, because mistakes can happen, and you just need to be ultra cautious. That's it.
Do you think lessons will be learned, though, John? I mean, like, Donegan mentions education, but, I mean, like, we're in 2020, you know? It's not like this stuff is new.
Yeah, and we have it all the time. And every year, an athlete will raise their head and say they haven't got education. And that's why we've worked hard with the GPA this year to make sure that education piece was covered, and with the GAA. And the GAA have run a lot of programs out with their players, and e-learning as well. So all that is going on. So what we're actually trying to do is take that lack of education out of the excuses, and make sure it's not a factor when athletes are have taken something. So really, all these athletes can verify now that they've done their e-learning courses, and that's just another part of the anti-doping program. But really, it is about the athletes knowing what their responsibilities are. And like, if this program has been ongoing now for 20 years, and if you're an athlete, a serious athlete, you should know exactly what the consequences are. And the consequences, whether it be the sanction, might be short, right, in a particular case, but you know, you have to live with that sanction, and that's not an easy thing to do in Ireland. And people in Ireland don't like it when an athlete has a sanction against them. And you know, like, other countries might be less tolerant, more tolerant, I should say. We're less tolerant in Ireland, and I just think athletes have a responsibility. They have a responsibility to themselves and their family and their teams, and the provinces and the national team. So, look, this is something that we'll continue to roll out. We roll out education programs all the time in our anti-doping program. We have seminars, we have e-learning, and it's at the flick of a switch now. All those education tools are there for the athletes.
John, 2020 has been a strange year, and lots of people use the pandemic. They've reflected and they've reset and they've set new goals. And just yourself, have you made any plans? Are you planning on staying on in your role of Sport Ireland CEO?
Look, I'm just probably playing it by month to month at this stage. I suppose my plan all the time was at the end of the Olympic Games in Tokyo to retire and get on with my life. Obviously, that's gone out the window now. But look,
So you're staying on, John. That's the plan, is it?
No, it's not. Well, look, these are not for me to make. These decisions are made for someone else in due course. But look, I need to, I suppose, do the best job that I can do for as long as I can do it. It's a privilege to do the job that I do, and I appreciate that. But look, I just need to do the job to the best of my ability. And there is always a challenge in this job. And this year it was around COVID, and that was a huge piece, and the NGBs and ourselves reacted very positively to it in terms of how proactive we were in the space. And you know, I think sport were well ahead of a lot of different sectors in terms of getting out there and setting up expert groups. I think Sport Ireland definitely helped and assisted on that. So look, this is what we need to do is perform at the top level, whether it be in administration or you're in any aspect of sport, for as long as you can.
Absolutely. John Tracy, thanks so much for joining us. I must also thank you. One of your clips when you beat Steve Ovett in 1980, I used to watch it every time before we'd play England. It just nailed for me a moment that Irish people never gave up. It was a special, special moment. So thanks for that and thanks for joining us.
Game on 2FM.
Now, some good news. If you are a League of Ireland fan, the FAI have just released a statement. The board of the FAI has approved the decision of the National League Executive Committee to resume the Airtricity League. So, League of Ireland football will be back at the end of July. So, Friday nights will now become very busy again, although they say there'll be lots of matches over pretty much every day. So, we'll be very busy, Donica.
Absolutely. Hopefully it stays this time and we don't have another meeting tomorrow morning.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And in the Premier League, it is still 1-0 between Sheffield United and Spurs, with Sheffield United ahead. Now, we were just chatting to John Tracy, a very famous Olympian, and we have a potential Olympian on the line. Andrew Coscarin joins us. He's launching the Irish Life Health Mile Challenge. Andrew, how are you?
How's things? How are you?
Absolutely great. We were chatting to John Tracy there, and I think any athletics fans will have great memories of him. But I was reading something that Cathal Dennehy wrote about you, and it was when you were at the Millrose Games, and it said, from the start, he ran like he belonged. And I think when you consider Ireland's rich history of athletics, it's actually fantastic to read that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, we're following in big footsteps from the likes of John Tracy and Eamon Coughlin, who was over there, and Ray Flynn and everything, they were over there with us. So I'm just following the footsteps of greatness.
It must be really nice, though, to actually have Irish athletes who have competed at that level, because you know that, you know, as a nation, we can do it, that we're good at it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, we're a small nation, and there's bigger nations out there, the UK and America, who are generally a powerhouse of athletics. But it's nice to be able to know that, like, we are capable, and we have the heritage of people who have done it, and like, we can do it as well, because we know we can, because we've done it before.
Andrew, does that really matter? Like, do they look when you line up, and do they think back to the 80s with the Tracys, the O'Sullivans, the O'Maras, the Coughlins? You know, does it give a sense of, yeah, Irish runners, you know, they can go out and whip up the boards here?
I think so, yeah. I think, like, when you're standing on the line, to be fair, like, you're just, everyone's in their own little world and just getting ready to run, and they're not really thinking too much into terms of where everyone comes from and stuff. But I think, like, everyone knows where everyone else comes from, and knowing athletes come from a place where the training is good, and they know what it takes to get ready for races, and learn from people before them. I think everyone kind of, if you have people like that ahead of you, you can kind of, you know that, and then people you're racing against will also know that as well.
You've been doing all right yourself, though. At the start of this year, you were ripping it up around the world.
Yeah, yeah. So I was on the indoors. I was on a little trip around America, down to Boston. I raced twice down in Boston, then over to New York where I raced in the Millrose Games, then came back to Ireland to race in the national indoors as well.
It was an unbelievable day for you that day, a championship record of 3:41. Like, you must have been a little bit frustrated with the break of COVID.
Yeah, yeah. So coming back off that little trip, obviously I'd raced well. I'd broken my 1500 meter PB, my mile PB, and then ran got my first senior national title. So I was on a roll. I was ready to kick on to bigger championships. And when we were over in Boston, I initially wasn't due to race at 1500 metres. And after I raced my mile PB, we were looking for 1500 metres, because then the World Indoors was on the cards. So that would have been just after Nationals. So that was called off due to COVID. And then coming into the summer, then the Olympics and the European Outdoors as well would have been big competitions. So it would have been great to kick on from those races and run for my country in those bigger races. But it's a bit frustrating that they've all been cancelled now.
Well, for a lot of people as well, Andrew, that year might do them a little bit of good. Are you one of those people, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm only young. I'm only just gone 24. And a lot of middle distance runners probably wouldn't peak till they're a little bit later. I know when I was racing in Millrose there, the majority of the athletes in the field were late 20s, whereas like I'm early to mid 20s. So obviously having another year behind me of training, is only going to benefit me when I get over to big championships such as the Olympics. And maybe if it was this summer, maybe I only would have made this, like, just made it to the heats. But now, potentially, with another year's training, maybe I could make it to the semi-finals, if not further on. Like,
that sounds very promising. And with Phelan Kelly at your side as well, Andrew, I don't doubt it at all. Thanks so much for joining it.
Game on 2FM.